this morning I'll be presenting a part of my master's research, but before I get to that, there are several people that I would like to thank, especially Vero, José, and Jean-François for help in the field, and Val Behan-Peltier for taxonomic assistance, and also for providing the wonderful SEMs of orobatid mites that you'll be seeing throughout my talk today. So the group that I worked with, orobatid mites, are well suited for research on forest floor habitat where they are the dominant microarthropod taxa. Orobatids are primarily saprophagous and mycophagous mites, so that means that they eat mostly decaying organic matter and fungi. So they contribute to decomposition and nutrient cycling on the forest floor. They fragment organic material, increasing the surface area available for microbial growth. They also stimulate microbial activity by grazing and releasing nutrients. They also disperse microbes on their body surface and in their fecal pellets. Orobatids have also been shown to expedite fungal assemblage recovery following disturbance, so they can also contribute to the resilience of the soil ecosystem. Orobatids have extremely high diversity and abundance, especially in forest soils. They also typify K-selected organisms. They have low fecundity, slow development, they're iteroparous, they're fairly long-lived. For example, in a temperate region, a single female could live up to 4 years, and she may lay only a few dozen eggs over her entire lifetime. Orobatids then have little capacity for rapid population growth, and very few of them are adapted for dispersal. So they're unable to easily escape environmental stress. So it's thought that changes in their abundance and species composition could take several years to return to pre-disturbance levels. Now, in undisturbed boreal forests, which is where this study took place, naturally occurring cycles of disturbance at different spatial and temporal scales help to shape forest structure, and this results in high habitat heterogeneity and a structural complexity that supports a high diversity of species. One very important component of this structural complexity is dead wood, so that's decaying stumps, snags, and logs. I'm going to focus on downwoody material like logs. Fungivorous mites play a role in wood decomposition by increasing that microbial activity, and wood-feeding mites also affect the structural integrity of wood. A few mite species might even be obligate deadwood inhabitants, but logs as a habitat for mites hasn't been well studied. It's possible that conserving orobatid biodiversity may help to maintain key forest ecosystem processes like decomposition and nutrient cycling. And in order to focus these conservation efforts, it's necessary to study the contribution of microhabitat variation to local species richness. So that brings us to my research question. What is the influence of decaying logs on orobatid mite assemblages on the forest floor? And I looked at abundance, species richness, and composition. So the study area was located at the Safe Research Station in Abitibi, Quebec, in the Quebec's Northwestern Boreal Forest in Canada. SAFE is an acronym for Sylviculture et Management Forestier Ecosystematique, or for, Ecosystem Management and Silviculture. The study area was about 2 hectares in size and was aspen-dominated stands that had been left undisturbed by fire since about 1923. So in this undisturbed study area, I selected 6 decaying aspen logs for sampling. Each log was sampled at 3 distances each, directly on top of the log, which was the on distance, right next to the log, which was the adjacent distance, and at least 1 meter away from the log and any other fallen dead wood, which was the away distance. At the on distance, there were 3 layers that were sampled: litter layer, an upper wood layer, and an inner wood layer. At the adjacent and away distances, I sampled litter and soil. Litter was standardized by volume, by 1 liter volume, and the wood and soil were sampled with a core that was 6 by 5 centimeters. All samples were extracted on site in modified Tallgrin funnels, and all adult orobatid mites were identified to species. So for this part of my research, I collected over 15,500 individuals in 80 species. In all layers, Opiella nova was the most abundant species. There was a huge difference in number of mites that I collected in the litter versus the wood and soil layers, so I analyzed them separately. the on distance, directly on top of the logs, I found four species that I didn't find at any other distance. Belda species 1, Dentichipteria near Hylandensis, Mycobates, and Opia near Nittens. I found a single individual of Podoterotegaeus tectus at the away distance, but I found all the other individuals, roughly 100, at the on distance. So looking at abundance, I've got the distances along the x-axis, mean number of individuals along the y, and the error bars are standard error. I didn't find any significant differences in abundance in any layer at any distance from the logs. However, what was kind of interesting is the rank abundance. Since the away distance was essentially a control, in the litter layer I ranked the top 20 most abundant species, which are along the bottom there, and looked at the changes in abundance as we move closer to the log. So this is the litter layer at away, at adjacent, and litter directly on top of the log. See a few changes in species-specific abundance. These changes are even more apparent when we look at the wood soil layer. Here's the soil away. I took the top 15 most abundant species in this sample. And as we move closer to the log in the soil, soil adjacent, we see loss of some species and changes in abundance in others. Upper wood, and innerwood. To look at species richness, I used rarefaction analysis. With a rarefaction curve like this one, species richness is standardized by sampling effort so that we can make reasonable comparisons across treatments, or in this case, distance, that may differ in sampling effort. So for this curve, we've got number of individuals along the x, species richness along the y. We need to look at just above 3,000 individuals to make our comparison. And we see that litter on top of the log has significantly higher species richness than adjacent and away, which are not significantly different from each other. If we look at richness in the wood soil layer, same thing, number of individuals along the bottom, but we need to look at just under 300 individuals here to make our comparison. We see that inner wood has significantly the highest species richness, followed by upper wood. And the adjacent and away distances aren't significantly different from each other. Another thing to take from this graph that's interesting is apart from possibly soil at the adjacent distance, all three of the other curves are still rising. That is, they haven't reached an asymptote yet, which indicates that we probably haven't sampled these habitats enough to accumulate all the species in the area. So with increased sampling efforts, these results might change. Okay, to look at species composition, I used non-metric multidimensional scaling, or NMDS ordination. This ordination, what you need to know about ordination is just that the closer points are in ordination space, just means more similar composition that they have. So this ordination explains about 90% of the variation in the data, and you see a pretty clear separation of samples that came from litter and samples that came from wood soil layer. So I'm going to analyze these layers separately. First, looking at litter composition, we see a pretty good separation of samples that came from litter directly on top of the log versus the adjacent and away litter samples. And multi-response permutation procedures do confirm that this difference is significant. This graph explains about 80% of the variation in the data. Looking at composition in the wood and soil, we see a really good clustering of the wood layers versus the soil layers. So I categorized the inner wood and upper wood as a wood category, and the soil adjacent and away as a soil category, and MRPP analysis confirms that these are significantly different compositionally. And this ordination explains about 82.8% of the variation. So some conclusions. In terms of abundance, there's really not a big difference between the forest floor and, you know, abundance on logs. But we do see some species-specific changes as we move towards the log along the forest floor. In litter on top of logs, species richness is higher than on the forest floor, and diversity is also higher in wood than soil. In litter, composition is distinct directly on top of logs. And composition in wood, whether it be upper or inner wood, is different from that in soil. So these results show that decaying logs on the forest floor provide a unique habitat for distinct assemblages of orabatid mites, This could be because they provide protection from desiccation or predation or just increased food resource availability. And with that, I thank you for your attention and I'd be happy to take questions. It was an aspen-dominated forest, and so that was the easiest log to find.
With your ordinations, when you see separation of the sample and the log and the axes, mm-hmm. are there any environmental variables that you think are really driving those?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked that. with NMDS ordination, those are hypothetical environmental variables. I don't restrain the ordination by any sort of environmental variables of my own. But I have some good ideas. I did take some temperature measurements at all the distances. I didn't present that data because I haven't finished looking at it yet. But I suspect temperature could have a really big driving factor in some of the changes of some of the species. Different species have different tolerances and preferences for things like temperature, pH, what have you. So I think temperature might be important here. I did. Like I said, I haven't gone through it yet, but I just don't get the feeling that that is important. There wasn't a huge difference in temperature. So.
How would you best measure moisture?
Oh, I just took the before and after weights of the samples that I extracted. Any more questions?